So thinking about an optimist, are you an optimist or are you a pessimist? Are you kind of the glass is half full? You know, do you think that ultimately things will work out? Ultimately good will prevail? Or are you kind of a pessimist? Do you expect the bad thing to happen? Do you know bad stuff's going to happen? That whatever's good going on, are you kind of like, this isn't going to last? Kind of one of those people you can find the negative and see the negative in everything. I'm kind of a recovering pessimist. And the worst kind of pessimist, or maybe the best kind of pessimist, depending on how you look at it, says, I'm not a pessimist. I'm a realist. I know what's really going down here. And that's pretty gloomy. That's a pretty gloomy take. I think it's kind of maybe somewhat our unique set of life experiences and circumstances that kind of make us view the world and life the way that we do. But I also believe that that can change. And that's actually one of the biggest things about being an optimist, is an optimist believes this bad situation can change, that things can get better. An optimist can see any difficulties in life, the bad parts of life. They don't look at it and say, oh, this is, it's always going to be this way and I'm going to be stuck in this. An optimist sees negative things in life as impermanent and situational. This isn't forever. Things will get better. Things will change. And so it's one of the greatest assets of an optimist is to know this isn't forever. This can change. People can change. My situation can change and I can change. It's not forever. This text we looked at, it's Matthew's take on the feeding of the 5,000. We actually looked at John's take on it a couple of weeks back. We can see some really amazing qualities of Jesus here. So it's a really good text to look at when you want to talk about Jesus and his leadership skills. Again, this is the feeding of the 5,000. This is like the height of Jesus's popularity. He's almost like, it's almost like there's this paparazzi following him. And he's giving them what they want. You know, he's stopping and he's healing them and he's taking care of them. And it says in our text, it says he starts healing them because he has compassion on them. He felt for them. He hurt for them. He wanted to provide for them. He wasn't worried. It wasn't like a popularity move. It wasn't like, oh, I want to do this so that you know, these people like me so I can get some power. He wasn't healing them because he was afraid of what would happen if he didn't. He wasn't like, oh, if I don't do something here, there's going to be a riot on my hands. It wasn't fear motivated. He just started healing them because he felt for them, because he cared for them. He had empathy for them. And then, as this is going on, they're out in the wilderness. They're in the middle of nowhere. The disciples come up to Jesus, probably excited for this huge crowd, but also really nervous because he's drawn quite the crowd at this point. Jesus has all this success and the disciples are probably thinking, whoa, we're part of something special. Look at this crazy sea of people. This is wild. This is exciting. But the crowd is so big that we can't handle it. And I felt like that as a minister before when I'm planning for something. They're like, whoa, I didn't know all these people were going to come. Are we going to have enough food? Can I handle this? Is what I planned here going to work? I'm a little nervous. And so for a leader, it's kind of an exciting and scary feeling at the same time to draw a much bigger crowd than you can handle and that you are prepared for. And so the disciples are thinking, hey, this crowd is really big. We've pulled a lot of people out of the city. We're out here in the middle of nowhere. They might be thinking, this is going to draw some unwanted attention from Rome. We don't want to get in the crosshairs of Rome here. It feels unsafe. But then at the same time, you're looking around and you're like, man, there's 5,000 people here. They're hot. It's a deserted place. I mean, where are they going to go to the bathroom? There's no food here. Peter's like, dude, we got to wrap this up. This is starting to look like Fire Fest. We can't have this on our hands. What are we going to do? They're being realist. There's an issue here. They can't feed them. They've got to tell these people to clear out. This isn't a good situation. We don't have the resources to have this many people out here. But Jesus doesn't want to send them away empty-handed. He's not Morgan Wallen. He's got something going on here. Where the disciples see a threat, where the disciples see a barrier, the optimistic Jesus sees an opportunity. And it's interesting to me because he doesn't say, don't worry, I got it. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I got something up my sleeve. He doesn't say, I'll feed them. He basically says, you feed them. You disciples, you take care of it. And similar to empowering them, we talked about that last week. He let them take an active part in what he was doing. In a sense, you could say it wasn't just Jesus who fed the 5,000. It was Jesus and the disciples. The disciples gathered up the food. The disciples distributed the food. Yeah, it was Jesus' power that did the miracle. But he let the disciples take an active role in that. He let them, and on several occasions, take an active part in his ministry and in his miracles on earth. God's work in his ministry, you can think of it as incarnational. It's God meets man, and man gets to be a part of that. Human beings, we get to be part of his ministry. He works, and he speaks through us, and he communicates his love through us. And you see him doing that here with the disciples. But speaking of kind of looking into his leadership, is good leaders give people a sense of purpose, and that's what he's doing here. He lets them know, you're part of something bigger. You are needed. You don't just sit on the sidelines while I do all the miracles. You participate in this with me. You are going to be used. You have a role to play here. And they need to participate. And so he's inviting them to join in what he's doing. And so I have a picture up here of his calling of the disciples. He says, come with me and I'm going to make you, we're going to go fish for men. And he's offering them that there's more to life. Because he calls them in a place where they're kind of doing the 9-to-5. They're going and they're doing this job and, you know, taking care of families, taking care of themselves. But in a lot of ways, maybe working for the weekend. Doing a job that maybe they didn't feel much meaning in. They're just surviving. And I think a lot of people are in that place. And I'm just, you know, I'm doing this job and I can't wait till it's over so I can go hang out and be with my family. And there's not much meaning. So when Jesus comes up to them and he says, hey, let's go fish for men, he's saying, let's be part of something very meaningful. Let's go change lives. Let's go change your life and other people's lives. And so a good leader attaches meaning and purpose to what they're leading people to be a part of. And Jesus did that very well. And in challenging them to participate, in saying, you feed them, he also sets up high expectations. Good leaders have high expectations. Again, you're not just going to sit there. I believe there's more in you. I have a job for you. I expect you to be involved. I expect you to take part. There's some coaches, I think of basketball coaches more than others, I'm sure they're all this way, that seem pessimistic at first. They're always unhappy. You can debate me about this later. I think the Greg Popovich is probably the best coach ever. And I've seen him at halftime and at the end of games where they're just annihilating the opponents. They are just whooping them up. Greg Popovich will say, we missed some assignments and gave him some open looks, got some bad fouls. You know, he's still picking apart the team, even when they're just like totally destroying the other team. Like, why is he doing that? Come on, man. Just relish the win. Enjoy the moment. But he's got these high expectations. And so good leaders with high expectations like that, where it's never good enough, as frustrating as that is, where it's never good enough, it also says there's more in you. You can do better. I expect more out of you. I expect you to play even better than you already are. Because it's the moment where a coach is like, man, y'all are great. There's no room for improvement. That's it. That's where you get comfortable. That's where you start coasting and not progressing anymore. So for any coach to be totally satisfied might be to kind of take your foot off the gas. And he's saying, no, don't do that. There's more in you than you think, and I'm gonna get out the best of them. I'm gonna pull out the absolute best and not be satisfied. And so in a sense, maybe there's actually some optimism in that pessimism. Now, I'm not pessimist. I'm not saying that like, oh, see, Brady says it's okay to be a pessimist all the time. But in this case, I really do believe when a leader's not satisfied, it's because they see more in that person and they want to pull the best of that person out of them. Good leaders, optimistic leaders, they see people not for who they currently are, but who they can be. Good leaders see the potential in people and who they can be, who they can help form them into. God does that with Moses. Moses is kind of like, I don't know if I'm the guy. Can you send someone else? And God says, no, I'm sending you. Gideon is like the weakest member, the weakest clan, the weakest tribe. The angel of the Lord shows up to Gideon and calls this weak guy a mighty warrior. He sees the potential of him, who he's going to create him to be, not who he is at that moment. So good leaders set high expectations and believe people can be better than the people even know. They look at people and they say, you have more potential and more gifts than you even think. Then important to note in this in the feeding of the 5,000 is there's leftovers. And so it's as if Jesus is saying, look, I'm not just taking care of you for the day. I'm taking care of you always. I'm thinking about your future as well. So the 12 baskets were representative of his willingness to feed the 12 tribes of Israel. And if you keep looking at Matthew, there's another feeding of the 4,000 later, which almost seems like a bummer. You like see the feeding of the 5,000, you're like, awesome, cool. And then a few chapters later, there's the feeding of the 4,000. Not as cool. He already did it with the 5,000. But the feeding of the 5,000 was to a Jewish crowd. The feeding of the 4,000 is to a Gentile crowd. And the feeding of the 4,000, there's 7 baskets left, which is another one we talked about. This is another one of these contextual things that we kind of miss. So for us, in like in American culture, we might be like, oh, 7, isn't that like God's number or something? Maybe that's what that's saying. In that culture, everybody knew what it was saying. It was for the 7 nations of Canaan. Just like the 12 tribes of Israel, there's these 7 nations of Canaan, and it's the same message. I'm here for everybody. I'm here to care for everybody, your entire group, every person. I'm here for that. I'm not just here for this one time. I'm not here for this just one quick, cute miracle. I'm here for the long haul. You and your needs aren't just something that I'm going to tick off my list. Just like, yep, check. Check, done, did that one miracle. I'm here to provide and care for you long-term into the future. So what I want to kind of glean from this is that good leaders have foresight. They think about the future, but not in a fearful way. A lot of times we think about the future in a fearful way, but they have this optimistic and hopeful way of looking toward the future. They plan on being here long-term. So they plan on the future, and they invest in future generations like we're doing this morning. Sometimes it's easy to get, as a leader, to get so caught up and busy in the here and now that you're just putting out fires. Maybe you've seen that with leadership. They're just handling whatever that issue is that's right in front of them, and they can't really think about the future. And in some ways, I don't want to knock people too hard for that, because really that's a sign of being overworked, having too much going on, where that's all you can do, that's all you have time for. So if you see a leadership like that, whether it be at a church or at work or at school or wherever else, maybe that leadership needs to outsource more. Maybe they need to empower more people so that they can put out the fires, but that they can also be thinking about the future of whoever they're leading, the future of the organization, the direction. That's something Wade was saying up here, is I think it is sometimes hard to think like, okay, I want to do good stuff, but I don't know where I'm going. And good leaders, they know where they're going. They're thinking about the future. But again, in an optimistic way, not driven by fear or anxiety. If we are thinking about the future with fear, we kind of train ourselves to only see things as threats, right? So if we think about the future in fear, we tend to close off. We become tight-fisted. Protective of our resources, suspicious of outsiders. We become not as welcoming as we should be. We want to send away people for fear of them, or fear that there won't be enough, or fear if this outsider comes in, they're going to make us do something different. They're going to change us, and we don't want that. So you can look at the future in kind of an unhealthy way, but Jesus believed differently. He optimistically believed there is plenty. There is plenty to go around. God will provide. And because he believed that, he was willing to give. He was willing to share. He was willing to be open. He wasn't fearfully sending people away like the disciples kind of wanted to do. He said, no, we're going to stay and we're going to provide for him and we're going to take care of him. And so that's one of the challenges for you guys this morning, is to live with this abundance mentality that Jesus had, a hope for the future, to live with the confidence that God is going to provide, that God will show up, that God will work. But I believe God wants us to be a congregation that actually has an optimistic eye towards each other, that believes in each other, that we can change, that we can grow. I want us to be a place that believes in this church, that God can use this place and the people in it in powerful ways. And maybe in ways we never thought possible. Maybe we've been sitting on the sidelines for most of our lives and still haven't claimed our talents and our gifts and our purpose that God has given us. It's not too late to do that. Maybe a lot of us have a lot more here to give and a lot more potential than we just haven't claimed. And I think good leaders see that in you, and I think God sees that in you. And so I hope that our church can be a place that doesn't just exist to exist, that isn't just a nice place to come to a nice worship service. I don't even only want us to exist for each other, and I do think we do that. I think we are a great community. But I want us to be a place with purpose, a place with purpose that goes beyond what we do here. I want us to what we do here to really matter, but I want what we do here to matter out there. So a place that looks outside of itself. And so if you're here this morning and you want to give your life to Christ, if you want to claim his abundance, if you want to do more than just be saved, a lot of times you talk about, oh, I got saved. That's kind of the end of the story. That should be the beginning of the story of how God's going to use you to shape your future and the future of other people. If you want to claim that purpose, if you want to join his mission, or if you have any other need, we want to invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.